Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Monday, November 17th. Immigration lawyers are turning to a law the Founding Fathers established to protect against a king. More on that next, but first, the headlines. The conservative majority on the Grossmont Union High School District Board drew harsh criticism from community members at their meeting Thursday after refusing to consider a resolution affirming protections of immigrants. Students, teachers, and community members rallied for the resolution. Among them was West Hills High School senior Lillian Zedner.
The biggest thing for me right now is that the needing for students here to be welcome and to feel safe. And I don't feel like with the current mindset of a lot of the board members, that's something that can be done without a little bit of pressure.
The resolution introduced by Trustee Chris Feit called for district-wide resources and training on immigrant rights. It also would have created a system for reporting ICE activity. Feit says he may try to bring another version of the resolution to the board, but given the current atmosphere, a different result seems unlikely. About 1,000 baristas across 40 cities, including here in San Diego, walked off the job late last week. The baristas are represented by Starbucks Workers United, and the action was named the Red Cup Rebellion because it landed on Red Cup Day. Typically, Red Cup Day is one of the busiest days of the year for Starbucks baristas. It's when customers can get a reusable red cup when they order certain holiday drinks. The union says the action was sparked by the company's refusal to offer new proposals to address its demands, including higher wages and better staffing. A Starbucks rep said the union represents 4% of its partners, and any agreement needs to reflect the reality that Starbucks already offers more than $30 an hour on average in pay and benefits for its hourly workers. The California Office of Traffic Safety is giving the San Diego Police Department a grant. It's aimed at reducing the number of serious injuries and deaths on our roads. It will support DUI checkpoints, enforcement of California's hands-free cell phone law, and officer training. Funds will also be used to bolster programs focused on bicycle and pedestrian safety. That includes community bike and walk audits for streets with a high rate of crashes. The grant program runs through September 2026. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.
As the Trump administration continues its mass deportation campaign, immigration lawyers are increasingly turning to a law the Founding Fathers established to protect against a king. Reporter Gustavo Solis explains why the law's use has skyrocketed in recent months.
Immigration detention centers across the country are already overcrowded, and the Trump administration remains intent on meeting its goal of arresting 3,000 people each day.
People are sleeping on the floor. There isn't enough to eat. People with medical conditions aren't getting the necessary attention.
That's Cassandra Lopez, a San Diego-based immigration lawyer. One of her clients has a serious heart condition.
And he's extremely worried about his health. They don't put him on the low-salt, low-fat diet. You know, these kinds of things that, you know, if he were out of custody, he would be doing for himself or his partner would be taking care of him.
Lawyers like Lopez say that the U.S. immigration system has never been easy to navigate. But now, something different is happening. people with no criminal records, who would normally be clear-cut cases for parole or bond, are getting denied. They say it's being done by design, part of a broader legal strategy aiming to boost deportation numbers.
They're using detention to make it harder for people to fight their cases.
And in recent months, lawyers have started to fight back with federal lawsuits that, before this year, were not really used in immigration cases. They're known as a writ of habeas corpus petition. Justin Brooks is a law professor at the University of San Diego.
Habeas corpus means release the body in Latin. And the idea is when someone's being unconstitutionally held in prison or incarcerated in any kind of facility, there's a petition you file in order to get them released. And you're basically saying with habeas corpus, you are holding this person in prison in violation of the Constitution.
Habeas corpus dates back to the Revolutionary period, when British troops conducted mass sweeps of people's homes without probable cause and threw people in jail without granting them hearings for their release.
So our Constitution really reflects exactly what was going on in the colonies and the concerns that the Founding Fathers had about a new government having the same kinds of powers and not having restraints on them.
Now, almost 250 years later, lawyers are using these petitions as a last-ditch effort to free their clients from immigration detention centers. They say that they don't really have another choice. Consider that in the U.S. District Court covering San Diego and Imperial counties, lawyers just filed one habeas petition in January and one in February. But that same court received nearly 40 petitions in September and more than 60 in October. Nationwide, the number is almost 4,000.
As far as other options on how to get our clients out, there really aren't any.
Nerea Shoal Woods is another San Diego-based immigration lawyer. She has filed several habeas petitions.
Even though the judge issued the bond, my client's family was about to go online and pay the bond, ICE can file this form to automatically stay the judge's order and prevent my client from being released.
People who follow the immigration court system, including retired immigration judge Dana Marks, say that this is not normal.
In 50 years, this has never occurred on this level.
She says that this speaks to how the Trump administration has rewritten the rules of detention and made the system more unfair.
It breaks my heart as a lawyer who believes in the rule of law that the law is being trampled and ignored and distorted and abused.
KPBS reached out to the U.S. Department of Justice with questions about the surge in habeas petitions and why they're being filed all of a sudden. A DOJ spokesperson did not respond to the main criticisms raised in the story, but issued the following statement. Quote, President Trump and the Department of Justice will continue to enforce the law as it is written to defend and protect the safety and security of the American people. Unquote. Gustavo Solis, KPBS News.
This November is the 35th anniversary of Native American Heritage Month. Ruth Ann Thorne is the first and only Native American business owner in the Gaslamp Quarter. She says the month helps combat common misconceptions about Native history.
For 23,000 years, we bartered and traded with people from all over the world. We learned from their culture, they learned from ours. We took ideas from ancient civilizations and we blended it within our civilization. And so the idea that we just got discovered by somebody who got lost at sea and thought they landed on India, it was really not accurate.
All month, events across the county celebrate the diverse cultures of the 18 tribes that call this region home. All right, SDNN listeners, today is yet another episode of The Pod Behind the Package. Package is news slang for a news story. The premise for this segment is simple. Identify standout pieces and stories from my colleagues that spark impact, inspiration, or some sense of feeling. Joining me this week regarding his package with the headline, From Housekeeping to Healthcare Professionals, UCSD Health Fills Vacancies via Paid Training Program, is reporter Jacob Ayer. What's up, Airman? How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Good. No problem. I'm excited to have you on here, man. I want to, before we even get into your package, I want to talk to you just briefly about your career maybe before here, right? Like, you started off your career, you spent some time as a sports announcer reporter, now doing general assignment. And I feel like one of your standout pieces, Soccer a la Frontera, was sports-focused and sports-based. Is that by accident, or do you kind of now, as a general assignment reporter, find sports stories to kind of still cure that love for sports?
It's a good question. For me, I think sports has always been a passion, so I always try and find ways to weave that into my own reporting. I do try and go beyond the box score, if you will, with a lot of my reporting. So whether that's focusing on the culture of sports or maybe issues within politics, gender, health, these kinds of things, that's where I'm really drawn to. So yeah, Soccer a la Frontera was a deep dive into the growth of soccer culture in our region. So on purpose, definitely pursuing my passion there. And I'm happy that we were able to do some follow-up coverage on it as well.
Yeah. Talk to me about that. When you talk to people in the region, do they still seem like true soccer fans to you?
I think San Diego has its own unique thing. I mean, just where we are geographically here, of course, Mexico is very, I mean, we share a border with Tijuana. It's sister cities. So we have this kind of unique blend of soccer culture that's both American and you could argue to some degree like European soccer culture. But then you have this uniquely like, you know, Mexican soccer culture, and they come together here in a beautiful way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Once again, Jacob Ayer with us. Transitioning now to your piece. To me, when I think about the package, the first word that comes to mind is bootstrapping. Mm. And the idea that people throw this term around and they say like, oh, just work harder, Jacob Ayer, just bootstrap. You know, why can't you, if you're working 60 to 70 hours in this hospital and you're the janitor, why can't you just bootstrap and become a professional? But to hear from people in your story say that those pathways don't have trajectory, they don't have the ability to then, they're kind of stuck in there. I thought that was cool to see from a professional running a program and kind of engage with a program, say like, you know, these pathways, being a janitor, you have people who are housekeepers, food services workers, it does not have much upward trajectory, especially when we talk about hospitals, right? Like the people who are doing medical get to the top quickest. Can you talk to me about when you even first found out about this program?
Yeah, so I actually found out about this program simply through an email that I received. I got a little bit of background on it, and it really piqued my curiosity. I mean, the thing that really stood out to me was the fact that folks who are traditionally maybe lower wage earners in roles, like you said, you know, housekeeping, janitors, there was a program that was actually paying them to potentially, you know, move up the pay scale. So I had some back and forth. I had this vision. So, you know, these are people, whether they're, you know, immigrants or whether they're just your typical everyday San Diegan who maybe doesn't have a college degree, finding a pathway partially through luck because they had to have worked at UC San Diego Health. But then, you know, they applied from that point and they worked their way up from housekeeping roles, and now they have this pathway to actually earn a lot more money. Yes, they're making more money now, but the future is really what I was told was the best part of this program for a lot of them. You know, they can continue to step up one tier after another for future jobs. And you got to keep in mind, I mean, this isn't like just pure altruism on the part of UC San Diego Health. There's a benefit to them too. Mm-hmm. They're looking for people who not only know the facility, but maybe have familiarity with similar tools or similar tasks. So they weren't getting the applicants they wanted. They did have a shortfall for this sterile processing technician program, for these jobs, that is. And they said, why don't we actually, you know, take this opportunity to look within our own facility, within our own department, within our own company here, because there's people who probably are doing similar jobs that are qualified. And sure enough, there's no guarantee when you join the program, you'll get the job. But in that first cohort, there was, you know, 10 applicants. They all went through the program and every single one of them actually got the job at the end of it.
And was there any examples of someone maybe who did the program, was successful in it as part of the first cohort, who wants to pick up some overtime shifts, still housekeeping?
So that's a great question.
Any hustlers in the group?
Well, so May, the main character of the story, she was saying it's been great. She actually chooses to work nights now. She says it's better for her family life. She's able to kind of interact with her daughter more during the daytime. And she's just clearly a hustler, a hard worker. And then she goes to work at night. She says as the holidays are coming up, because, you know, cost of living, cost of goods now is quite expensive. We talk about things like inflation. She's planning to maybe pick up some extra shifts around the holiday, she said. You know, she's working a lot closer to 40 hours a week, but maybe 40 to 50 is probably her standard week. But yeah, she did mention picking up some extra shifts as we head into the holiday season here.
Did they mention any potential changes or improvements to the next cohort?
Another great question. So yes, they said that they haven't ironed out all of the details per se. They do have, you know, the next 10 people chosen. They potentially could be shifting where they do some of the training. So last year it happened at Southwestern College. They might actually be doing some of that classroom portion somewhere else. They're not sure yet. They'd also said that the in-person training, which happens in that same lab, or at least it did last year, that might be happening at the Hillcrest site. They're not sure yet. It'll be at one of the UC San Diego Health medical facilities. So some changes there. They've learned, of course, from their past experience, but it was largely successful. I mean, they did graduate all 10. Like I said, no guarantees. This next 10 group, applicants, they might not all get through, but they've made some tweaks along the way. But people are still getting paid in full, and that's the main thing.
Got you. That's super important. And then maybe, you know, people from the second cohort or third cohort would be trained by May. Maybe she'd be the one showing them.
That's a great point.
She'd be training the next person.
That's a great point.
For the future groups. Once again, this was Jacob Ayer with us on SDNN's Pod Behind the Package. That is it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. By doing so, you are supporting public media, and I thank you for that. Have a great day.
From El Centro to everywhere, we're Voices del Valle.
Voices del Valle?
Voices del Valle is a team-produced podcast about coming of age in California's Imperial Valley.
I love Voices del Valle.
On the next episode of Voices del Valle, we will talk with teens about their cheer and soccer championship seasons. I've got to listen to that. Voices del Valle, fresh voices, bold stories made in the valley.
Voices del Valle, find us on KPBS or wherever you get your podcasts.